The Humanist Speaks of Easter by Reverend Kendall Gibbons. There are only two things we know for sure. Once they stashed Jesus' body in a tomb, temporarily, until they could get a chance to bury it properly, and when they came back, the tomb was empty. Make of that what you will. There are many possible explanations, some more likely than others. I don't believe that Jesus came back from the dead. Neither did Martin or Malcolm. Neither did Viola Luzzo or Frozan Safi, the women's rights activist shot by the Taliban in Afghanistan last November. Neither will journalist Jamal Khashoggi or Alexei Navalny when he dies in a Russian prison, both killed. Nor will Kevin Strickland and Lamonte McIntyre, they will not get back the stolen decades of their lives. I don't believe that crucifixion is a story with a happy ending, or that it was a one-time event. It happens over and over as the human journey unfolds. It happens to us and to the people we love. It happens to the righteous and the innocent. Crucifixion happens and it feels like the end of the world every time. It feels like nothing could matter anymore, ever. And then inevitably and miraculously, something happens next. Something happens. Of course it does. Because the world hasn't ended yet. It's not always an empty tomb. How trite would that be? Mostly, the beloved bodies just lie right there, peacefully decomposing. But something happens. And whether we want it or not, a new chapter begins. Maybe the sun comes up, or the lilies do. Spring rolls around. That happens. Or memories come, or someone needs you. You eat food. That happens. You walk down the road and share a recollection. Life happens. It keeps happening. The dead don't rise, but we do. One day it happens, you take a breath, and it doesn't hurt to breathe. You start to see people again, really see them. Hope rises, community rises, you rise, we rise, life rises. Not because death isn't real. Crucifixion is not just pretend. But something else is just as real, maybe even more real. Something happens next. That is the other thing we know for sure. Life rises. Outrage rises. Love rises. Faith rises. Tears rise. Hope rises. This I do believe. Easter is a popular day for Unitarian Universalists to come to church or their congregation. Perhaps maybe because it is the popular Sunday for all of our mainstream Christian friends to also go to church. Easter assembles the Christian community for the annual retelling of Jesus' resurrection from the dead as a living Christ, as the central narrative for the purpose around which Christians exist today. As Scotty McLennan writes, the predominant understanding that Jesus lives with them in their daily lives now. Christ is an honorific title that technically means the anointed one of God. And for most Christians, Jesus is the post-Easter Christ, the resurrected Christ who is actually with them now in real time, who companions them and comforts them and challenges them in their daily lives, not just a prophet or teacher of first century Israel. Okay, so what's a Unitarian Universalist to do? Almost none of us, even UU Christians, believe in a bodily resurrection of anyone. We would say that no human corpse could resuscitate, referencing science. Scotty McLennan is a UU minister who wrote a book called Christ for Unitarian Universalists. And he gives us a contemporary picture of the focus on Easter. As we state in our current UU denominational documents, an important source of our living tradition is humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science. So no resuscitated corpses and no idolatries of the mind and spirit for us. Yet we also state that we draw from Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Those teachings are the very essence of the Christian message as the biblical Jesus explained it. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments, he said, hang all the law and the prophets. Another theologian, Karl Scrovel, explains that the resurrection comes with the recognition that any of our lives can always be transformed to begin again. The resurrection comes with the Christ within us breaking forth, he writes, as if from the tomb, inviting us to be reborn by enacting the Christ self we had forgotten or never known at all. Innumerable resurrections are happening every day, just as the author of our reading, Reverend Kendall Gibbons, stated. And you know, by experiencing this way of thinking about resurrection, people have stopped drinking, changed jobs at great risk, held their ground before dictators, and so much more. McLennan argues, and I think I agree with them, that there sadly seems like this unbridgeable gulf sometimes between Unitarian Universalists and most mainstream Christians. Maybe you've even felt that gulf in our own community. As to how to help bridge that gap, we Unitarian Universalists need to answer the Easter questions for ourselves with integrity and with intellectual honesty. We deserve to understand the resurrection story for ourselves, but I don't think that attempting to present the right evidence or say that this is good theology and this is bad theology is necessarily the way to go about it. These are not Peeps and Cadbury's. Here on Easter morning, it's not my task as the preacher to recite or argue the evidence for the resurrection, but to help the life of the community shape itself into renewal and transformation, both personal and collective. Scientific or intellectual honesty about Easter and the power of imagination and theology, those things aren't mutually exclusive. Michael Fitzpatrick, an Episcopal priest, says that in the past century, this approach of proving or disproving has been popular among American Christians as well. Proclaiming the resurrection of Jesus is not a matter of proving a fact of history, he says, by just presenting the relevant evidence. There have been best-selling books with titles saying they've got the key. They've got the piece of archaeology or physical stuff that proves the resurrection through a historical argument. And as a result, there's plenty of skeptics and progressive Christians doubtful of the resurrection as a real event that have then published their rejoinders expressing their skepticism that anything really happened at all. Theologian Sarah Coakley says that these efforts, both for and against the historicity of the resurrection, are misguided. They assume that the resurrection is a regular fact in the collection of historical facts that are available for observation by anyone. Celebrating Easter, she says, is not like a celebration of an ordinary historical event, like Marie Curie being the first female professor at the University of Paris or the end of apartheid in South Africa. The disciples are given time to become people so that they can see the risen Jesus. The promise is that if they're so transformed, then they'll see him. Even to Paul in the New Testament, the resurrection body was a spiritual body. Coakley suggests that encountering the fact of the resurrection, its reality, requires a change within us. So for Unitarian Universalists, I think this means that in order to accept the resurrection as something that matters in theology, we have to enter into the Easter mindset. We have to become the kinds of people who are felt in our own living bodies, the impact of our relationships to one another and to the earth, to our most beloved teachers, human, animal, or otherwise. Then our ability to know and feel and perceive and claim that belovedness can lead us to be transformed for always, transformed by love. Even death cannot separate us from how we have been changed by those kinds of powerful experiences. We remember, as Reverend Gibbons said, in our own bodies as ones that can be reunited with love when we bring ourselves and our attention back to that moment, to those people, to that community. Coakley notes that when Jesus appears to his disciples, some recognized him right away, described him one way, and while others only believed later on. Whether we can recognize or acknowledge these pieces of resurrection in our own lives depends on becoming the kinds of people who can see our material bodies as places where God and Spirit act. So in trying this on, I read many contemporary Christian, progressive Christian, and Unitarian Universalist perspectives on the resurrection story, as it was creating within their own lives a place where God could act. So there was this Unitarian Universalist minister named W. Edward Harris. He explained that there's cruelty, brutality, selfishness, and abandonment in life. So there are values and principles as well that cannot be killed. They will rise again, often in unexpected ways, he said. Justice may be corrupted, delayed, denied, but it will ultimately emerge born again in the hearts of people, he wrote. Beauty might be paved over by concrete, but again and again it starts to find startling ways of shining through and driving out the tawdry or the ugly. Courage may be imprisoned in cells or the darkest of tombs, but it keeps unpredictably springing up anew in the hearts of the oppressed. Love may be long buried beneath hatred, but sooner or later, the stone will suddenly be rolled away, allowing love to re-enter. There's another minister, Reverend Anita Farber Robertson, who grew up in a home that was bristled with fierce passion for justice. Her Jewish parents met at a Young People's Socialist Party picnic, and they both distrusted religion. But Farber Robertson somehow developed this sense of the benevolent presence of one who held and was the universe, and who held me in love, she says. In turn, she loved that force in the universe, and she felt infused with love for others, which fed her thirst for justice. And when she was in high school, the civil rights movement was in full gear, and she became deeply involved in marching and demonstrating, working for political candidates, fundraising. And along the way, she found the Black church, and she said she didn't understand the theology she was hearing. She knew very little about Christianity, but she was learning gospel hymns about a God who loved freedom, who walked with the oppressed when they marched and they suffered. Jesus knew these people, And in them, in him, they had a friend in the struggle. She explains that her mind couldn't make sense of what she was experiencing, but her heart could. I sang those spirituals with an aching empathy that captured what I had no words to say. Later in her life, she made her way with some activist friends to a Unitarian Universalist fellowship, who described it to her as a place to go to be encouraged and recharge your battery. Does that sound familiar to anybody? So then she went on to seminary as one who distrusted and was puzzled by most of what she saw in the broader field of Christianity. But she wanted to work to understand the language and aspire to participate actively in interreligious activities. She came to feel that the poor and oppressed were themselves the Christ, that Christ was always there in those who were hungry, thirsty, sick, imprisoned, or in need. She saw that Jesus companioned and sustained them, loved them in the midst of rage and frustration, and allowed them to also love their enemies. Barbara Robertson came to want to see that kind of Jesus in her life too. And eventually she found herself saying, "You are my guide, my teacher, my Savior, the one who keeps me going on in the journey toward wholeness and justice, toward love." There are many, many more of these stories, some in Scotty McClellan's books, some other places of Unitarian Universalists, both who identify as Christian and those who do not, who find hope and inspiration in the resurrection story. And here's my small mystical story. Many of you may remember that when I came to be your minister, I had a dog named Violet. She was my sweetheart. And Violet was born with this corkscrew tail. And actually, this stole was made in honor of her and has a picture of her inside of it. This is Violet's stole. And so this tail was distinctive. It was sort of like a little pigtail, but not quite as neat and tidy. And there may have been many dark brown pattern bully dog breeds out there with white fur patches on their bellies, but there was no other tails like this one. She was unmistakable. And you may also know that Violet died 2 years ago around this time of year. I held her in my arms and said to her, "You have done such a good job, my sweet girl. You can go now. You can rest. I love you." And of course, it was hard and sad and heartbreaking. I had that feeling in the months that followed, and occasionally I still do I feel her presence at my feet, the energy of her memory so deeply embedded in my own body's experience of the world that she returns to me. Particularly when I am alone, I feel her participating in my life, which may sound strange, but these mystical experiences of love beyond death can sound a little strange. The question is not whether you believe, but whether we have known such a thing. Some of you also know that almost a year ago, we adopted 2 kittens. You may know that. If you don't, I have pictures. I will show them to you. We met them at a mobile adoption van, and my wife, who didn't think she'd ever want a solid colored cat, she likes stripes and things like that, held this tiny black kitten with one white whisker, almost in one hand, and his dark brown eyes met hers, and she said, "Oh, this is my boy." And I held his sister cat, who licked my hand and purred, and that's all we needed to see. We took them home 20 minutes later. Now, when we got home, this male kitten, who we thought in the poorly lit van was solid, black all over, we actually saw had this dark brown pattern all over his body and a white patch on his belly. And then we looked at the end of his tail, and it's curled, just winding around itself, almost like a pig's corkscrew tail, but not a perfect coil. So I lifted him up close to my face to inspect him and said, "Violet, are you in there?" The question is not whether you believe. This kitten, a few months later, I'm not joking, began to play fetch with us, placing a toy at our feet, and after we throw it, returning it to us over and over again. Violet, are you in there? Still, the question is not whether you believe, but whether you have known such a thing. We are all under that same promise of if we live life with love in it, we will lose and then we will meet again and again and again. I believe that whether I recognize Violet or not, or believe in her or not, or even know her name, again and again, she comes and walks a little way with me along whatever road we're traveling. And I believe that for more than just me or just this experience, though there's something that happens to us, or we see somebody we know, who can ever guess how or when or where? It's like a secret mystery, and we find we are not lost to one another, even in death. There is something greater, something far more mysterious that brings us new hope again and again. Is there a mystery you have felt that perhaps words cannot explain or capture? An aliveness felt inside you that feels both new and familiar, but you must allow out to be spoken, to be tested out in community. That is part of our faith promise as a community. Like the woman at the tomb so long ago, we too have been captured by a mystery, and through our words may stumble. How can we not speak of it? And in the speaking, oh yes, maybe through our words shared here in this sanctuary online, heaven will be brought just a little closer to earth. Indeed, maybe in the telling, others will sense the presence of a calling to life and embrace it with us. The Easter message, again, is not about proving, disproving, did it happen, did it not. Instead, it asks us to stay together, move alongside each other in this big tent of Unitarian Universalist beliefs, to be counted among the living. At every crossroad, may we be prepared to bump into wonder and joy and more love and freedom. Thank you.